So as we gather here for family worship today, I see like, wow, this is a really packed more than usual. So if the worship team, if you guys need, I think we all fit in here. Okay, right? Okay. So today we're actually going to look, I thought it would be good for in terms of family devotion, I'm hoping to really address those that are younger, just to put the cookie in the lower cookie shelf of the jar, so to speak. And really, I hope all of us, what we want to encourage, what Pastor Andrew, when he first started this, was really to encourage even parents to even talk to the kids also as well, even afterward, about maybe perhaps how you even apply this in your life, and also as well how they themselves, this Word of God, will also apply for them. Today, we'll actually want to look at a story that perhaps every Sunday school kid is familiar with, and that is really the story of David and Goliath. But I hope as we turn to the story of David and Goliath in 1 Samuel chapter 17, I hope today as we look at the story of 1 Samuel chapter 17 with the story of David and Goliath, I hope that even for those that are younger also as well, perhaps you have heard this story taught, and I want to show that even what the story about is perhaps even a lot more deeper than we think at first about a story of David and a really big bully. It's more than a story about, for every Sunday school boys to like, oh, this is a story about how I can win against a bully. I actually think there's something more to this story also as well with this, and I hope to show that all of us should be just like David, really with his faith and his trust in God. So the story is not so much a story about a big bully and you're a small little guy and the guy's picking on you, and then therefore you say, oh, Pastor Jimmy's telling me to throw rocks at the bully. That's not what I hope you guys will go back to with your parents to learn. Actually, I think the main story of this is actually another main point, because when you look in the story, whenever you ask what is the main point of the story, you want to look at the story to see what repeats the most, what keeps on repeating again and again, right? Before I even go any further, I want to ask any kid under 14 years old to answer me. What is the story of David and Goliath is all about? You guys could answer me loudly, big boy voice or big girl voice also as well. What is the story of David and Goliath about? David? Or Hector? Albert? It's about faith, he said? Okay. Jonathan? Stuff? Okay. Lots of stuff, right? But I want to show today, actually the story here, when you look at 1 Samuel 17, the thing that repeats the most again and again is a word that is used to describe mockery or blasphemy. In fact, the word mockery and defy repeats 6 times in the story, and I think this is actually the main point of the story. It's not so much a school bully picking on a little kid, but it's a story in terms of application. It's not even, a lot of times when people hear this passage, we also think a lot of times it's like, okay, this is about our self-confidence. It's about how I need to win my Goliaths and pick 5 stones, 5 good things about myself and go and win something against my own struggle. I think the story is bigger than that. In fact, I think the story is actually about God. And the story is about someone that comes and mock God, and how do you live your life in front of people that mock God? Note with me in verses 10. This is the first of 6 instances of the word mockery that occurs. In verses 10 it states this. Again, the Philistine says, I defy rank of Israel this day. Give me a man that we might fight together. Notice the word defy appears. And the word defy and the word mockery is the same word that appears again and again. In verses 25 is another instance of this. In verses 25 it says, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And then in verses 26 you see this mentioned twice, the word defy, for the fourth time, third and fourth time, where it says, then David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? And then again in verses 36 and then in verses 45. So when we look at this passage, in light of the fact that this word mocking and defy appears 6 times, the story is not so much about, oh, it's for our self-confidence to win the Goliaths in our life, or against the story that we preach against so that little boys can win against bullies in school. But the story is more about that people are out there making fun of God, mocking God, and how do we as Christians live our life with that? Which is really to still trusting God in those circumstances. And today I want to show really 3 points. There's so much I want to preach in these 49 verses, but I'm going to go through a bird's eye view real quick to show that for every one of us, no matter how young you are, you could be young as David. And I think in this story right here in David's life, he was very, very young. He was probably not even a teenager, in my opinion. Very, very young. And I want to share that every one of you guys, I want to see even all our boys to trust in God, even when you're going at school, when people make fun of you as a Christian, when your name is David, when your name is Albert, when your name is Hector, when your name is Katrina and Karina and Jonathan, you are all to live out your faith and to trust in God even when people make fun of you, if you were to talk about Jesus to them or things about the Bible. I want to show 3 points today. The 3 points is to trust in God even when those mocking your faith is very scary. Even when those mocking your faith could be very scary. The second point is I want to encourage you guys to trust in God even when no one else seems to no longer trust in Him. To still trust in God even when others are afraid and no longer trust in Him. And thirdly, I also want to show that we should trust in God even when you cannot rely or trust in yourself, right? 3 points. Trust in God despite the person against you is very scary. Trusting God even when others are no longer trusting in God. And thirdly, we should trust in God even when we can't trust ourselves or have anything to trust in ourselves in our life. The first point I want to show is that to begin with the story here in 1 Samuel 17 is a story I think every little boy is like, the story of a battle. There's a battle that's going on here. If you look in verses 1, it mentions, verses 1 and 2 gives the setting a little bit. Now that we read, it says, the Philistines has gathered their armies for battle, and they were gathered at Socah, which belonged to Judah, and they camped between Socah and Azekah in Ephraim. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered and camped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array to encounter the Philistines, right? Now we see the story here that there's a battle that's going on here. The Philistines, which were a different group of people than Israel. Israel is where Jesus would eventually come from, although this story is 1,000 years before Jesus Christ was born. And you see that there's a battle coming around, and just for us, I know it's very hard for us to picture a battle in our home country, but when you think about the story, one of the main characters in the story is David. In chapter 16, it mentions that he is from, his father is Jesse, who's from Bethlehem in chapter 16, verses 1. And the city where the battle takes place and Bethlehem is nothing more than 11 miles away, which shows that this battle was something that is coming very close to Bethlehem, to David's own home, to a young boy's home, and realizing that the battle was close enough that he could even walk over there also as well. And there's a time where there's a lot of turmoil, a lot of fear also as well, that I think perhaps we might not experience in America today, growing up as young kids, is that realization that, hey, there's danger everywhere lurking. And here was this young boy, 11 miles away from a battle zone, and with all these things in turmoil and everything else, the whole country is in turmoil, and here is the circumstance that there's a time that it's very hard to trust in God, for those of us, is perhaps in this story here. We can imagine that 11 miles away, they have seen people walk back that have been wounded. We can imagine going out there giving food and realizing, well, there's armies to be fed and there's not even a shortage of food even where we live also as well. If there was a time ever to trust in God, and if there was ever a time that it's difficult to trust in God, it was during the case in this story here where the Philistines was 11 miles away from David's own hometown. David, a young boy, knows God and trusting God even in this circumstance. But I want to show you this point. The first point is really to trust in God even when those mocking the faith are intimidating, right? Even those mocking the faith are intimidating. I know when I talk to those that are young, some of you guys, the kids and stuff, that it is not easy living out the Christian faith. Even when I talk to you guys, that sometimes people would even make fun of you for the fact that you are a Christian, right? Even perhaps even the siblings also as well who do not know Jesus Christ would even say, why do you even go to church and everything else? But I want you to see this passage to encourage us that though people might make fun of our faith, might be intimidating, we should still trust in God. And I want to show you really the point is even Goliath himself is someone that is intimidating. Imagine David, a young little boy, pictured Shell David's age, right? And then here it is, a Goliath, right? If you look in verses 4-7, we see the picture of Goliath. The writers, whoever wrote 1 Samuel, wrote so much description of Goliath. The question for us is, when we read this, is why did he mention so much about Goliath description more than David? And I think the reason why he does that is really to show how intimidating, how scary Goliath is, as you see in verses 4-7. Verses 4-7, I'll read again the passage. It says that the champion came out from the armies of the Philistine, named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was clothed with scale armor which weighed 5,000 shekels of bronze. He also had bronze greaves on his legs, and a bronze javelin slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and the head of his spear weighed 600 shekels of iron. His shield carrier also walked before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, and said to them, "Why do you come out to draw up in battle's array? Am I not the Philistine? And you servants of Saul, choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me," right? Notice here, the guy's intimidation factor, this guy is very, very scary. The description of Goliath is very scary in the sense of what he wears and also what he's described like besides what he wears. Added to the fact that he's so scared of who he is himself, it's more details describe all the military gear he wears makes him even more scary for all of us to even look at him, right? Note in the first part that he is a great warrior. By the very fact, in the first part of verses 4 says that described him as a champion, or some of your version will probably say warrior, right? He's a warrior from an army of the Philistines, an army from the Philistines, or a nation that fought for years against Israel, who have fought with many experience, and he was to be the champion of them, right? He was to be the greatest one of them all, right? But notice also as well the description about this man himself. He was also a man that was very, very tall, right? My version in the Bible says that his height was 6 cubits and a span. Now the question is, what is 6 cubits and a span? Translated into English, translated into American measurement, the guy is actually 9 feet and 6 inches. There was one time I measured the church because we were supposed to try to get like some cloak going around. And the building here is roughly about 9 feet and something, almost 10 feet here, right? So imagine, here comes a guy, you're standing there, a guy that's as tall as the building itself, right? And then you're to be like Shao's age or Jonathan's age, and you're standing next to him and you're looking. Would that be kind of scary? Yes, right. That's pretty scary, right? He's 9 feet, 6 inches tall, and this guy is making fun of God, and he's coming approaching you, and he wants a battle, right? That's a pretty scary thing. But now do you see that the description of him is scary? Even what he wears also as well is scary, as you look on with me in verses 5 and 6. Verses 5 describes that he wears a military helmet. Verses 5 states this in the first half. He had a bronze helmet on his head, right? Now, this guy is wearing a helmet. Just for us to put this in this context, the strongest metal in this time period was actually bronze, right? So this guy was wearing the most strongest type of metal possible, which is made out of bronze. He's wearing this, and he's wearing this as a helmet, when a lot of other soldiers do not necessarily wear a helmet, right? So if he's already 9 feet, 6 inches tall, he wears a helmet, do you think he's probably look even a little bit more tall, right? He probably is. And even then, if you were to throw something at him, it would be a helmet that would protect him, right? And it's protected out of the best military equipment possible. And he's making fun of your God and everything else, and you're standing small as Shell, small as Jonathan, and looking before you. Someone who's mocking. And that's pretty scary, if I might say, right? But more details are also given. In fact, he wears armor, and heavy armor also as well. Going picking up in the second half of verses 5, it says this, "And he was clothed with scale armor, which weighed 5,000 shekel of bronze." Again, it's mentioned that the metal he wears is made out of bronze, the strongest metal possible to protect himself, right? And on top of that, it says that it weighs 5,000 shekels of bronze. 5,000 shekel of bronze, translated in English today, actually means 126 pounds, right? So the guy is wearing 126 pounds of armor. I remember when I was teaching this Bible Bible study when I was in the Marines in Iraq, I was telling some of the Christians, because we didn't have nothing to do in Iraq, so they would say, Jimmy, give us a Bible story. And I'm like, okay, I'll give Bible stories. And I remember when I was teaching this, I was telling the guys, this armor weighs 126 pounds. Some of the Marines started looking at me. They're like, you're not even 126. You know, you're not even 126. The armor weighs more than you as a person. I'm thinking, yeah, that's kind of true, right? Isn't this such a scary imagery? This guy is 9 feet, almost 10 feet tall, wears bronze helmet, and his armor weighs as much as a person, right? Probably more than David himself, right? The guy could, all the guy has to do is just take out the armor and just, you know, throw it on David, and David will probably be, oh, it's too heavy for it to be standing up, right? This is how scary this guy is, and he's making fun of your Christian faith. Could we dare say anything about the guy? Say, hey, you can't make fun of the Christian faith. The Christian faith is true. God is greater than everything that you could ever say, and he is a living God. You cannot make fun of him like that, right? Pretty scary to go up to him and say that, true or not? Yes, right? And all God's people say, yes, right? So on top of that, it goes on even, describes even also as well the javelin, or javelin is something you throw, almost like a spear, throwing the spear, but it's a little bit longer in the end, right? It's something also as well, it said that it's even also made out of bronze, right? And then in verses 7, it says that the very tip of it, the spear, which happens to be made out of iron, weighs 600 shekel of iron, which weighs about 15, 16 pounds, right? Could you imagine this strong guy, 10 foot, standing up, and you're saying, hey, don't make fun of Christianity, right? The guy comes up, what? What did you say? He weighs all that. He throws that 15, 16 pound. I mean, my head doesn't even weigh 15, 16 pound, right? And imagine the impact of this, right? Every little kid, every little boy has their imagination with that, right? It's an imagination, and all these descriptions for a purpose is to show that, hey, when this guy makes fun of the Christian faith, nobody wants to say anything back. In fact, we'll probably look down and say nothing and let him continue on. In fact, it was brought about because of who he is. Notice the response it brought upon the people of God in verses 11. Verses 11 says, when Saul, who was the king at this time, and Israel heard these words of the Philistines, they were greatly dismayed and greatly afraid, right? Greatly dismayed and greatly afraid. Even the king himself, who stood taller than all the rest of Israel, they themselves, all of them, great kings and warriors alike, were afraid. And then you see in verses 12, there's a mention of a little boy. And the little boy's name is David. Verses 12 to 22 is going to give a long description of this little boy who happens to walk into this time period with everything here, right? With everything that is going on here. So I want to show that this is an application for us also as well. That no matter how small you are, no matter how intimidating someone making fun of our Christian faith and mocking it, we should always trust in God, be more afraid of God than be more afraid of man. Maybe today in our world, it might not be a big giant that makes fun of Christianity that we have to face. Perhaps it is people that are there that are smarter than us, people that are more cool or more popular, whatever situation you might be. You might be in high school where you're trying to share your faith with your friend and they think it's not cool and everything else, but will you still stand for God, even in despite the intimidation of those that face you, right? If the first principle that we should trust in God, despite how intimidating that our circumstance is, despite how intimidating those who mock the faith is, I think the second principle we need to see is that we ought to trust in God even when others no longer trust in Him. Even when others no longer trust in Him. Look with me in verses 12. Verses 23. Verses 23 mentions this. As he was talking with them, and this is speaking about David, behold, the champion, the Philistine from Gath, named Goliath, was coming out from the army of the Philistines, and he spoke these same words, and David heard them. Verses 23 mentioned that this Philistine comes out again, and he speaks the same word. The question is, what are these same words? These are the words that were described and given in verses 8 to 10. Verses 8 to 10 is, we read that the guy, Goliath, stood out and shouted to the ranks of Israel and said to them, why do you come out to draw up in battle's array? Am I not a Philistine and you servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourself and let him come down to me. And he's challenging them to a fight, right? He's doing this and he does this more than once. verses 8 to 10, you see this one time. Then in verses 23, it says that he says these same words at least two times. In fact, if you look with me real quick in verses 16. Verses 16 mentioned that he didn't do this just only just once or a second time, but he did this at least every day for 40 days. Verses 16 says this: the Philistine came forward morning and evening for 40 days and took his stand, right? 40 days, I mean, talk about 40 days of purpose. This guy had 40 days out there, standing out there, making fun and mocking God and mocking all of Israel and everything else all at the same time, and saying for 40 days, hey, I dare any one of you guys to come out and fight me. If you guys can't fight me, how strong is your God? Your God is not even helping you out. God is not real and everything else. And I want to point out that in this part, it doesn't give the description what bad words he says about God, but we know enough that it says that he mocked him, and that David responds in that way. We see that he mocks God for 40 days, and for 40 days, the bravest warriors of all warriors did not say anything back. The bravest warriors who saw a man that was 10 feet tall, and did not remember God. Up to this point, up to verses 23, the story is written. Of course, this is the story in the Bible, and the Bible says it's about God. But if you look in the story, verses 1 to 23, there is no mention of God whatsoever. There's no mention of God whatsoever. In fact, if you look up to this whole story, the only two people that mention God is not the king. It's not even the warriors of Israel. But the two people only that mention God is a young boy named David and also Goliath, who makes fun of God. No one here at this moment remembered to look to God and ask God for help, which is a travesty, right? It's a travesty that it took a little small young boy that shows his faith in contrast to the rest of the nation and all the warriors also as well, right? God is sometimes, I think, the beautiful story in verses 12 to 22. All these descriptions here, when we read it, might be, we won't read the whole time, but I would love to go through this some other time. But when you read verses 12 to 22, it seems like it's going very slow. It describes the story of how David in Bethlehem ended up in front of the battlefield, 11 miles away from his home, right? Ended up in the battlefield. And I want to make a point that in verses 12 to 22, why is this in there? Why did the writer of Samuel spend these long verses to write about all this part? And I think the reason why is this, is sometimes when we think God is not working, God is still working behind the scene, right? This guy stands up, big Goliath stands up there. And if we were to even say that this boy was David was a teenager, the average guy back then was probably 5'5", which is probably my height. Think about this guy standing here, and this guy so tall, 40 days mocking God, and people would be asking the question, where is God in all of this, in this tough time, in this troubled time and everything else? Why won't God come down and help us? Why won't God bring somebody to help us? But verses 12 to 22 mentions the story of God, how God's going to bring this help, but it's not going to be the way we think it is. Sometimes God answers prayer requests, and the way he answered prayer requests in helping us is not going to be the way it is. It comes in the form of a child in verses 12 who comes to actually bring food for his brothers, right? For his three brothers that's fighting, and to hear the news of what's going on, to bring back the news to his father Jesse, that's described in verses 17. And when you first look at this little boy and you think about how tall it is, with everything else, you would think this is probably not God's answer. But I want to point out God's answer is found in verses 12 to 22, but the answer might not be what we expect to see. And that should be true of our life also as well. Sometimes when we see people are making fun of God or mocking God, and you wonder, man, this guy is out to get me, but where is God? Well, how come he's not helping me? Perhaps sometimes we need to take a step back and ask, where I need to open my eyes more closer, more wider, in prayer with God and ask him, God, show me how you are working in this tough circumstance. And here for 40 days, there's mockery that's been going on here, right? And David is now in the scene. David in the story here, when he heard that God was being mocked, he responds in verses 26. And what he speaks here is not like any other words that of anybody else before him. It's an amazing faith that shows that no matter how young you are, it's never too young to trust in the power of God. Verses 26 states this: David spoke to the men who were standing by him, saying, what will be done for the man who killed this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God, right? So this tall guy stands out there, right? Stands out there making fun of everything else. And as soon as David hears it, he responds with two questions by saying, A, is someone going to take care of him? And second question, someone should take care of him because he's making fun of the armies of God. And not so much the army that's being made fun of, but God himself is being mocked and is being blasphemed. Right? Here's this young little boy. I could imagine as he says this, all these other older soldiers are like saying, hey, don't say that. I don't want you to risk your life. You're a young little boy. What are you saying? Don't taunt him. Don't say this any more louder. Don't say it again. Because if you say this again, he's going to come and attack. And this will be over and we'll all be killed. Right? And here was this, in contrast to all the warriors, verses 26 shows that this boy has faith, right? He's looking towards God. And I want to also point out, when you look towards God, God is also looking towards those people that are looking to God and trusting in God, right? In contrast to the fact that Goliath is very tall, I want to point out something early in chapter 16 to show that what God looks at is not so much how big you are, how experienced you are, how awesome you are, but is really to see your relationship with God. Turn back with me in 1 Samuel 16. As we look back in 1 Samuel 16, I want to set up the context for what it is that's going on here. 1 Samuel 16 is the first mention of David. First mention of David in the book of Samuel. 1 Samuel is going to spend most of the time in this book is actually talking about David. And the first time you see David is actually in verses chapter 16. That there's going to be a prophet, Samuel, who's going to go and anoint a king to replace a new king, to replace the bad king, which is Saul. Now, when Samuel goes out there, God tells him to go to the house of Jesse in verses 4, right? Verses 4, he goes to Bethlehem, and everybody's even afraid of this prophet, asking, does he come in peace? Now, when he finally goes over to Jesse's house, verses 6 states this, when they entered, he looked at Eliab, that is Samuel the prophet, and thought, surely the Lord's anointed is before him, right? David has many brothers. One of the brothers was Eliab, perhaps the oldest. And notice, as soon as he goes into the house, the Samuel prophet says, oh, Eliab must be the man of God, that God is anointed to be next king. Why does he say this? I think the reason why he says this is because when you look at Eliab, Eliab was a man that was very, very tall. Looks like a king. Looks like someone you would want to vote to be a president. But God, in verses 7, says something very dramatically different than what Samuel thinks should be king. Verses 7 says this, but the Lord said to Samuel, do not look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I have rejected him, for God sees not as man sees. For God, man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You see, the most important thing is really to trust in God. And God will see your heart and your trust in Him, right? Man will look at the external. As this verse says, and I think it shows very likely that Eliab was probably a very, very tall man in order for God to say, don't look only at his mere appearance. Don't look at his muscles. Don't look at the fact that he looks like he's been doing PX90 all day long, right? But look, don't even look at his height also as well, right? But God will look at his heart. And I think the foil of that is wonderful to show that Eliab was tall and very likely perhaps David, who was out in the field, was short. In fact, he was probably short. It doesn't look like a king whatsoever. That his own father, Jesse, said, hey, he's young. He's kind of short. He doesn't look like a military strong warrior. He'll be out in the field. I'm not going to call him in. Take care of the sheep, right? He's short. And yet, he will be missed. And God will finally say, hey, no, I'm not looking at only external experience. I'm looking at the heart. At the heart of a man and a woman who trusts or does not trust in God. He looks at that first. And our strength as Christian comes from our relationship with the Lord, right? In contrast to this, going back to the story here, back to 1 Samuel 17, this short little boy sees a tall man making fun of God, probably very short, and then he says those incredible words, right, in verses 26, words that we have read. I want to point out, when he says in verses 26, that what will be done with this man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach? And why does everyone keep allowing him to be taunted with God? This is the first time that David ever speaks. For two chapters, David has not spoken a single word here, right? It's almost as if he's been mute. That's not to say he never spoke. But I think it's important that the very first word that David ever speaks as a young boy is really, it shows his trust in and in his faith in God, right? And this is where his strength will be at, right? The very first word he speaks here, after two chapters of him being silent, finally he speaks, and the word he speaks shows his trust in God, right? And I think this is beautiful because here's this boy speaking. He has been around for two chapters, and yet the narrator didn't have a speak. And at the same time, this Goliath guy has been speaking, right? Gah, 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 gah. He's speaking all this whole time for 40 days, gah, 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 making fun of God and everything else. And this boy comes, a man of few words perhaps, and just spoke this one word, and this word is deep and penetrating, right? A word that shows his trust in God, right? His trust in God. And the people's response was one of fear, right? People's response is one of fear. And I want to point out that when we trust in God, when no others trust in Him anymore, sometimes the way we see people respond shows really the lack of faith people have with God. And we should also avoid being that type of individual. Notice 24 and 25. 24:25 says this: when all the men of Israel saw the man, which is Goliath, mocking God, they fled from him and were greatly afraid, right? They saw him, they're already far away, and then as soon as he's yelling, they even ran away further, right, because of their fear. Verses 25, the men of Israel said, have you seen this man who is coming up? Surely he is coming up to defy Israel. And it will be that the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches and will give him his daughter and makes his father's house free in Israel, right? This guy is so unstoppable that even the king will give so much reward, make him wealthy, even offer, hey, you'll be able to marry our daughter, right? I know our church in the English side, we have many single guys. You want to be married? If you were to be in that time period, you would want to take up this offer, right? But no one takes this offer. Because why? Because it's very scary. This guy is intimidating everything we have seen, right? And people are afraid and people are running away. Instead of trusting and going in prayer and trusting in God for strength and doing their job, which is their job, is to be a warrior, right? But I also want to show that sometimes when people are afraid of the circumstance, when they're afraid of people and afraid of circumstance more instead of God, a lot of times you see that the people that are afraid of God oftentimes will attack those who do have faith in God. They might say, yeah, I believe in God, but I don't have much faith as you do, David. Therefore, I don't want to look bad. I'm going to go and say, what's wrong with you, David? You're not really have trust in God. You're everything else, right? Look with me in verses 28. David has just uttered those words of faith. In verses 28, Eliab, his older brother, heard what he spoke to the man. And Eliab's anger burned against David. And he said, why have you come down? And with whom have you let those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart, for you have come down in order to see the battle, right? And I can imagine this. This is like, you know, a bigger brother and a younger brother, right? The younger brother is saying something, and the bigger brother is always like, ah, no matter what the younger brother says, it's always wrong, it's always bad, right? But notice here, Eliab, who's a tall guy, saw early in chapter 16, he's a tall warrior, his brother is shorter, his brother is younger, he looks at the guy, he's speaking all these things, he's showing his faith in God, and because of his fear and inability to trust in God, notice what he does. He, instead of attacking Goliath, what does he do? He decides to attack the little boy who has faith, because why? It's kind of bad, right? If you see someone who has faith, it's kind of convicting, it's kind of feeling guilty. So he attacks the little boy instead, because after all, what's easier to attack, the little boy, his younger brother, or the actual giant that's against the faith, right? And it should be like us also as well. Whenever we see those that are younger, have faith, have an incredible courage by faith to share the gospel, we should never be say, oh, you know what? You're just young. You're just only passionate for God. Wait till 5 years. Wait till you become a Christian like me. Then you no longer have the passion of God. That should not be the way it is. Rather, you should flame their desire to love God more. We should be like those that are younger, right? Even as I preached last week, as I mentioned, that even for my own faith in my walk as I evangelized, it took a 6-month-old, 3-month Christian that always asked me, all these Bible Christians, that encouraged me to be more brave and more loving in the way I share my faith also as well, right? We should not be like Eliab, who, when in the face of circumstance, when we don't have faith, we attack the people of God who does have trust by saying, oh, you're just naive, you're just young, you don't have enough experience, you don't know anything, you're just too simplistic, right? Do not be like Eliab, but rather be like David, who trusts in God, and even the very words, the very first word you trust, a man of simple words, but whatever words you speak is one of deep conviction and of deep truth, right? In terms of our own practice in our life, when others attack our faith, right, keep on going, I think it encourages us to keep on reading the Word of God to see the examples of faith and even the promises of who God is, right? The promise of who God is to continue to endure even when others are mocking and attacking our faith. The first point of the point here today is to trust in God even when those mocking our faith is intimidating. And if the second point is to trust in God even when others do not trust in God anymore, I think the third point for us to remember is that we ought to trust in God even when others, even when you have nothing to rely on yourself, right? Even when you have nothing to rely on yourself. Now, as the story goes on, verses 28 to 31, apparently David is going around everywhere, right? Can imagine the soldiers telling this little boy, be quiet, or otherwise, this guy will come and chase after us, right? And kill, it will be the death of all of us, right? But he does not stop. He keeps on going around asking everybody, hey, this guy, is anyone going to stop this guy? He's making fun of God. He's mocking God. You guys are soldiers. You guys are warriors. You guys are supposed to do your job. Hey, take care of this guy. He's going around. This guy cannot keep on being mocked of God. Apparently, word got around because he cannot keep his mouth shut with his trust and his love for God. That by this point in verses 31, even the king has heard what David is speaking about. 31, picking up verse 31, it states this: when the words which David spoke were heard, they told them to Saul, and he sent for him. David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail on account of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And I love this imagery because earlier in verses 28 to 30, David never says, I'm going to go fight this Philistine. I think the reason why he finally says in verse 31 to the king, say, hey, king, don't lose heart. I'm going to go fight this Philistine. I think the reason why he did this is not because of his pride, but because as a young boy going around asking all these different people, he suddenly discovered that no warrior, no soldier was actually going to defend the honor of God, right? No warrior was going to defend the honor of God to such a point that this little boy was going to pick up his own slingshots and he was going to go out there to defend the glory of God, right? And the pride of God and the reputation of God here, right? And I think this is a scenery here that should be shameful. It's a shameful one to all of Israel. It's a shameful one to the king himself who's supposed to be the leader. And now here's this little boy. The king would even ask this little boy to come before him. And this boy would profess an amazing word of faith, right? But the words of faith, as I want to draw out later, is not a faith, oh, I believe in myself. I have self-confidence. But it's actually more of trust in God, right? Trust in God is really what it is. And I want to point this out because as you go on in verses 33 onwards, we're actually going to see that really when Saul's going to point out that, David, you are inadequate. You have nothing that I could trust you. There's nothing inside you that we could rely on you or you yourself could rely on to be able to win against this mocker of the faith, right? I want to point out, as soon as he says this, I, your servant, will go fight this Philistine. Notice the words in verses 33. Verse 33, Saul says to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine, to fight with him, for you are but a youth, while he has been a warrior from his youth, right? The first thing that Saul does by showing why this guy, David, could not trust in his own self is, first and foremost, in contrast to Goliath's fighting warrior experience, Saul points out to David that, A, he was inexperienced. The inexperience is pointed out in verses 33, but in the first half, when he says to David that, A, you're just a little boy. You're just a little boy. How could you fight against this big warrior giant? And in contrast to that, Goliath, I love this part, it says, Saul is pointing to the boy, saying, hey, you're just a little boy, right? You're just a little boy. And then he points to Saul, Goliath, and say, but he's been fighting since he was a little boy. It's almost like this irony here, right? That, hey, you don't trust him as a little boy to be a warrior, but apparently some other king has trusted this young boy, even at an early age, to go out there to fight and gain experience early on, right? That's the dilemma that you see, this irony that it is, right? This guy who since a little boy has been fighting, been a warrior, and this little boy wants to fight, but he says, oh no, you're just but another little boy. The irony here, I think, is rich here also as well, right? If there's something that could be stated, I think all of us agree with Saul. Hey, Saul, we agree with you that when you look at David, there is nothing in David that is reliable that we could trust that he would in fact be invincible and actually win against Goliath because he lacks experience, right? He was inexperienced. Not only was David inexperienced, he was also ill-equipped for the task that he was supposed to do, right? He can't even trust in himself with his own experience. Not only that, he can't trust in his height and his physical strength because he was short, as we saw earlier. On top of that, he doesn't even have the equipment to be able to do the job, right? He can't trust in his experience nor in his equipment, as you see as it's developed in verses 38 to 40, right? Verses 38 says this, "Then Saul clothed David with his garments, right, and put a bronze helmet on his head, and he clothed him with armor." I love this imagery here. Saul sees this, that, oh, there's a guy mocking the faith. He's not going to be the king, to be the leader, to go out there. What does he do? He takes off his own helmet and puts it on the boy, right? He takes off his own warrior clothes and put it on the boy, as you see in verses 38. And then in verses 39, David girded his sword over his armor and tried to walk, for he has not tested them. So David said to Saul, "I cannot go with these, for I have not tested them." And David took them off, right? I love this imagery. I can imagine that Saul, as we see the description in other places, is quite tall as a king. And here he is putting this, and I can imagine this little boy is like, you know, in his parents' clothes almost. Like, he's like, "Oh, this is too big for me," right? And I can just like, just picture that vivid imagery that this is a young little boy. He's putting on all these things, and it doesn't fit him. And he's going around with a helmet that's too big. It's probably going down. He's putting on the body armor. Everything else is too big, and it's going down. And then he realized, hey, you know what? All these equipment, it won't work for me. These equipment won't work for me. They're more of a liability than they help. So he decides to put them off. And then you see in verses 40, where it says this, "He took his stick in his hand and chose for himself five smooth stones from the brook and put them in the shepherd's bag, which he had, even in his pouch, and his sling was in the hand, and he approached the Philistines," right? So David picks, instead goes without a sword, which every warrior in their time period is fighting, has to fight with a sword. Instead, he just grabs a stick, grabs a stone, and going to go with a slingshot, right? He's going to go out there, fight a guy with a slingshot, a guy that's wearing a bronze metal helmet that protects him. And he's going to go, and he's going to go with these stones. And now, I know a lot of times, there's other times where I've heard people say through Bible studies where people say, "Oh, these are five stones. What are five things about you without confidence and fight your Goliath and yourself, lack of self-confidence?" I don't think that's the point we should go and make spiritualized weird stuff like that, right? He just picked up little five stones. He just went over there, right? His trust was not in the five stones. His trust really is in God, right? And I think it's important when you see in the words he says in verses 34 to 36, 34-35, David gives the reason why he knows he's going to have victory. He knows he's going to have victory because he knows that God has been training him. Even as a young shepherd boy, he's already been, God is preparing him for this moment. But if you read verse 34 and 35, without verse 36, we would actually think that this guy was prideful, right? David is prideful. Who does he think he is? Verse 36 makes it clear that the reason is why he's not prideful is because, really, it's not so much his trust in his self-confidence. It's really his trust in God, right? Verse 36, "Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, since he has taunted the armies of the living God." He's saying, the reason why I have true victories is because God is being mocked, and God is the one that's going to make me be able to have victory. I think for us also as well, for all of us, we need to realize our strength should never be from our self-confidence. When we go to school, I know I'm a product of the American education system that stressed so much about self-confidence, right? This, early on, at an early age, even when I was little, when I wasn't doing well in school, you go, and the teachers would always say, "Oh, you could do better. You could always can," right? Well, they always stress self-confidence is the number one thing. Do you guys realize there was actually a study that was done where they asked all these kids in different countries, in the United States and China and in Asia and everywhere else, they asked every question to the kids, "Do you think you're pretty good with math?" And do you know who's among the most self-confident kids that they think they're good at math was? The country is actually where we are at, right? The United States. And among the lowest statistically of self-confidence of them themselves to do the math well was actually in Asia, right? Was actually in Asia. The lowest percentage all across the board was in Asia, the lowest self-confidence. So then they brought out the test to test the people, right? They test the American kids, the Asian kids, the European kids and everything else. Do you know who scored the lowest among all the kids? Was actually, I'm sad to say, it was actually American kids. But do you guys realize who scored the highest was actually Asian kids in Asia, I'm not talking about over here at TCAC right now, in Asia scored higher. So I think the point is to show that our self-confidence does not correlate with our success. You could have great self-confidence and really have no success to match it whatsoever. You could have such a low self-confidence and excel exceedingly well, right? And a point for all of us, I think as parents, for all of us, even as kids also as well, is not so much seeking in confidence in ourselves, saying, oh, what is it about me that's good? Maybe I should go to Oprah Winfrey's show for her to tell me how good I am, right? That's not the point. It's really to put not in confidence in ourselves, but to pull our full confidence in God, right? That is what we need. If you look at the scripture, when you look at all 66 books in the Bible never says our solution is more confidence in ourselves. But rather, the scripture keep on encouraging us and admonishing us to put all our confidence really in God, to put all our trust in the Lord and say, I know who I really am. I am one who is inexperienced, ill-equipped, but I trust in you. You is the one, O God, O Yahweh, whom I need to trust in more. In the same way also as well, as you see here, I love reading this story here because when you read the story, every little kid, when you ask the story, they always remember the scene about, oh, him throwing a slingshot. I remember also as well as a little kid going to VBS, seeing someone throwing a slingshot and thinking, wow, that's a cool story. And that was like the only Bible study I always remember when I was 5 years old, all the way until I was 15 when I became a Christian. That was the only story that I always remember, was that the whole throwing thing. Because every little boy, all of us could also be the same way. We're stuck with the only with the moment of the battle, stuck with the idea like, oh, he threw one shot with one kill, right? And that's all we remember. But notice here in verses 48 to 49 describes the actual battle itself. Then it happened when the Philistine rose and came and drew near to meet David, that David ran quickly towards the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into the bag and took from it a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. And the stone sank into the forehead so that he fell on his face to the ground. So he died. And I want to point out here, it's one of the most interesting things. It took 48 verses before we finally get to the battle in chapter 17. And when the battle actually was described, it was only described with two verses only, right? The battle itself was only described two verses, which shows when the writer wrote 1 Samuel, his point, his main emphasis was not so much the battle. In fact, the battle, when you read it, it's almost like, oh, that's it? A stone in his head, that was it? And the guy fell and... that's it? No cool, you would, because we grew up in a product of American movies, right? We would think, we want to see it slow motion like The Matrix, right? Slowly go hit over there, so it's so dramatic, see the guy's face, see how cool it is and everything else. But the Bible doesn't describe the battle itself, it's just so short. But in contrast, when you look at verses 1 all the way to 47, the writer talks more about things before the battle than the battle itself. And I think the reason why he does this is really the writer wants us to look more at God, not at the warrior David himself, right? Look more at God, not at the warrior himself. To look so much more, to look at God. God is the main hero here. God is the main character here. To show that even in this whole circumstance, the whole story about him trusting in his David, his amazing faith, in contrast to all of those in Israel who lack faith in God, is really the true battle, the true great story that is recorded here. Not so much the throwing scene of the throwing of the stones, which is the story here. And I want to end by this today, by really looking not so much at David. I don't want it ever be. I love teaching Old Testament stories, but the thing I always feel is always dangerous for us when we teach Old Testament stories, it's so easy to go say, hey, let's be a hero just like David. We need to be like David. David's a great hero. If you keep on doing that, if all you ever do is reading the Bible without seeing the Old Testament stories, without seeing God, but only seeing human beings as heroes to worship, guess what happened? You eventually read, and your kids will also read slowly, to the story of David and Bathsheba, right? And you say, oh no, how could you make him into a hero when he sins, right? This point is the hero will always have to be God. I would want to encourage you not so much to look at David as the one who's a hero, but look at David's son, his great-great-great-grandson, which is Jesus Christ. Because David himself did not look to himself for his own strength, but looked far into the future in his hope and in his trust in a future son of his that will be coming out to be a king and to be a savior. Turn with me, and I think it's appropriate to close with looking at Psalms 110 in these last few verses as really where our attention should be like. David should point us to Jesus rather than David being the one that we worship and say, oh, I want to be just like, right? Really, because that's why he's looking also as well at Jesus. In Psalms 110, I know for some of you guys in Bible study on Monday night, we're going through Mark. And we saw 110 that even Mark even quotes these verses to show that this is talking about Jesus, right? Psalms 110, these are a word of Psalm of David in the beginning as it says on top. It says, the Lord says to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. The Lord will stretch forth your strong scepter from Zion, saying, rule in the midst of your enemies, right? Even as great as a king David was, Mark would later make the point, and Jesus would even make the point, why is David saying, Yahweh God will say to my Lord, when it's his own son, who is this son that's going to come that's even going to be greater than David himself? And we know, of course, that greater son is really Jesus Christ, because he's not only king, there's no kings of David in his lineage that was both king and priest, except for one, which is Jesus Christ. As you see in verses 4 onward, the same king of David from David's line will also be a priest. In verses 4, a priest according to the order of Melchizedek. He's a king priest who came to rule one day. Before he will rule one day fully in this earth, he came to die as a priest, offering his blood, his body, dying for our sins, right? In closing, as I said, I think our attention should be focusing and looking towards David, right? Today, I think it's been a good year, the last year or so. There has been a lot of news of Christian celebrities, right? Christian celebrities, the people that really are genuine Christians. People like Tim Tebow and Jeremy Lin. I got so excited. I don't really watch basketball. I even got excited with Jeremy Lin. I don't know. Raise your hand here if you've been excited about Jeremy Lin here, right? I'm excited also as well. We all with Jeremy Lin, right? I got excited so much that I found out that one of my classmates, one of Oscar's friends, is actually his pastor in his church. I was thinking, wow, this guy go to strong, good, solid church, right? And I see on Facebook, that's how I know the news today. I go on Facebook and I see like 18 people talk about Jeremy Lin. Who's Jeremy Lin? And so I Google him. I was like, wow, this guy's Asian, Chinese American. He went to Harvard. Wow, this guy's pretty smart. And he's also a Christian. And he goes to a really strong church, a master seminary guy who's also my classmate. It's like, wow. I almost feel like, could you invite me, you know, Daniel Chen, could you invite me or his church also to play our church basketball game, and we bring him as our secret weapon, right? That's how much we love this guy, right? But I think one thing we need to realize also as well is when we look at all these great men, when we look at Jeremy Lin, when we look at Tim Tebow, when we look at even the man David, we should see their faith and we should emulate them in their faith. But I think it's important sometimes to realize these people deserve not so much more of our praise, but more of our prayers, right? More of our prayers. And that should be also as well for us. I can't imagine what type of temptation that woman is throwing themselves on Tim Tebow, right? I can't imagine what kind of temptation these men face, right? And the incredible amount of pressure that people could say, hey, if he loses a game, haha, God is not with them and everything else. Just a mockery that could occur, right? That if he slips up, if their life was just wrong just a little bit, the news will run with it and suddenly they are just like the star, just disappear, right? In the same way for us also as well, I want to encourage you guys, don't look towards man. Don't look just only towards those people. See them as an example, but all these people are pointing to someone more. They're pointing towards the Son of David, Jesus Christ. If we have a true relationship with Him, God sees that true relationship and will make us great warriors in the faith also as well. Make us one who stand firm even when others mock. We will still trust in God. Renew your relationship. Look towards the Son, Jesus Christ, the Son of David, who came down, died for us, rule in our life, and will sustain us and encourage us and hold us even through the toughest trials. Amen? Let us close in a word of prayer.